is exclusive access into the heart of racing. The Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum.
And it's a case of out with one apprentice and in with another. Freddie Kersley's just wandered out and T.O. Nugent's just wandered in after a very busy morning. How are you, T.O.?
I'm very well.
And the first thing you said was, what's this valet caper that Fred Kersley's on to? That'd be a great help. You better latch onto this driver service.
Yeah, definitely. Look, my dad was out on injury for a little bit, but he was driving me around. And, I'm actually quite missing him at the moment.
Yeah. Because you're... I'll talk to you about your dad in a minute. And he might be making a training comeback because you're going so well. But... you are a very busy young guy, and a snapshot of that is the day you've already had and the day you would have if you weren't suspended. You'd probably be going down to Warrnambool as well. But you're riding out for Kieran Maher and Dave Eustace, and you've just made a crazy dash from Caulfield after the 8:40 jump out. Tell us about your morning this morning.
Yeah, it's been flat out. Woke up at 3:30, got down to the track at 1:45, and we kicked our morning off at 4 o'clock at the Tower.
And where are you living at the moment? Close to the stables?
Yeah, pretty close. Just moved out into a new apartment really close by the stables and, good spot.
What time does the alarm go off this morning?
The alarm goes off at 3:30 and try and hit snooze a couple of times before we have to roll out and get out of bed.
How many whacks on the snooze do you do? I do about five.
Two's my limit.
Two's it. So you get to the stables at 3:30-ish, and you mentioned off-air that Kieran's got a bit of a new practice at the moment with the jockeys all assembling at the one point. So how does it play out, and how did it play out this morning?
Yeah, so on a Tuesday, the past couple of months has been working out quite well. We used to just ride our horses out in lots, but now on a Tuesday, a team of jockeys, myself, Linda Meach, and Liam Reardon, and a couple of others that hang around the Tower, we get our staff to trot our horses out, and we jump on, and we're off.
What's been behind that idea?
I guess we can just get them done a lot quicker and more efficiently. Jockeys are, I guess you could say, on the job a bit more, or part of the team. So,
Hey, I want to ask you. Mentioned Linda Meach. She's a bit difficult to get a hold of for interviews, I know that much, but she's such an amazing workhorse, Linda Meach. What sort of an influence is Linda?
Yeah, Linda's great. She's always there and gives a helping hand and will give you her fair share of what she thinks, which is I love, and she's very very straight down to point.
Yeah, she's not too sentimental. So you rode 10 or 15 track work and then dash in here, and under normal circumstances you'd probably be joining Fred Kersley, not in the valet driven car but separately, down at Warrnambool, but you're currently suspended.
Yeah, out for a week, careless riding, got to learn how to steer him a little bit better. But
was it your fault?
100% was. Just horse was tiring, laying out, but should have kept it a bit more straighter, but it's a bit hard when they are tiring laying out at the same time.
Oh, so there's the excuse. Okay. So you're back Friday and you haven't worked out yet whether you're riding at Moonee Valley or Mornington?
Yeah, back Friday. The managers, we've got rides at both meetings, just weighing up where we should go and what are the better options. But I'll leave that in Ash Beer's hands, and she's doing a great job.
Absolutely, she is. And in your absence, you've been keeping a close eye on those who might be catching up to you in the riding winners' ranks. And you're top five in Victoria, which is unbelievable, with something 40-something winners, because this time last year, you'd barely had your first race ride.
Yeah, like to think back 12 months ago, I'd just had my first race ride, and shortly after this time last year, in January, February, I went up to Gay Wardhouse for 3 months, and didn't get race riding up there, but it was a great experience, spent 3 months up there. Well,
so that's even 3 months out of the 12 months, so... A staggering rise through the ranks from you, hasn't it?
Yeah, you could say the past 6 months has just been unbelievable. Really hit the ground running, and the team of management behind me, Ash Beer and Kieran and Dave at home, just gave me that really good push forward. So,
what's been the reason? Has it been just the more successful you become, the easier it becomes to be successful? Do you find that the momentum's the key?
Yeah, definitely momentum. I guess you could say the more winners you ride, the more confident you get in yourself, and I guess that's been a big part of it, but definitely having gone to Gays and having that experience behind me is, can't fault it.
Now, the experience, the running around everywhere crazily experience of Gay Waterhouse and the extreme, almost industrial-sized operation of Maher Eustace is a complete contrast to something you experienced in Ireland, and we'll bring that up, but we'll go back to the start of the story with you, and when I gave you a quick bell yesterday just to sort of suss out your story, and I didn't know anything about you, but I discovered that you grew up in Warrnambool.
Yeah, I did. I guess you could say there's a connection with Kieran back home in Warrnambool. Dad knows Kieran quite well, and went to school down in Warrnambool and grew up. Dad trained a couple down there, a couple of handy old jumpers, and I think he finished up in 2012. And
now, he wound up because jumps racing was had a noose around its neck.
Yeah, so he didn't know if he'd have a career tomorrow, you know, if they were going to continue on it. But so Dad got out of the game while he could, and I went from there, went from school. I started working for Quinny Scott down in Warrnambool, part-time. And
school, just back to school, it wasn't really your caper?
It wasn't. Like, I was in two minds. Like, if I want to be a jockey, I do or I don't.
Because you had a bit of a racing connection. Your mum was a very good rider. And, in fact, your dad and your mum met in Japan when your mum was riding in Japan. But none of your siblings are into it. So you probably automatically at a crossroad early on where there's probably a good reason not to do it, but probably a couple of good influences to go that way.
Yeah, definitely. Look, mum and dad never pushed me to do it. They were always there supporting me if I wanted to do it, but I really credit them, you know. They would never pressure me into riding. I was really actually hot and cold with my ponies back when I was quite young. But they, you know, they never pressured me into riding around. But now they're very, very supportive to where I've made it this far.
Just tell us a bit about your mum, because your old man was a trainer, and he sort of hung it up when jumps racing looked like being run out of town, but it's made a resurrection, and there's a little story there about his renewed interest. But tell us a bit about your mum as a rider.
Mum was she says,
what was her name as a rider?
Kerry Newby was mum's name. She started off with old Jeff Murphy many years ago, and knocked around Caulfield and was an apprentice back in the day, but I think she finished up riding in 2002 or 2003. And she said it was quite hard being a female rider back then, really early on, but she made a nice career out of it, and it was a good part of Dad's team.
And Dad's found himself in Japan one year and comes across Mum.
Yeah, who would have thought? Made in Japan I was. But
You'll end up at a $2 shop.
Hopefully not.
So they met in Japan. What was he doing there? He was a jumps trainer. Was he just travelling around, wasn't he?
He was, I guess he was furthering his career as well, as training. He was doing a lot of pre-training for... I can't remember the team at the moment, but quite a big training operation in Japan, and a team of about 100 or 150 horses he had, and it was a massive, massive operation of pre-train and break and Dad done back there, and Mumsy walks in and Dad lays eyes on her, and the rest was history. But
fell for it straight away.
Yeah.
Then they end up at Warrnambool. And you came along, and then you ditched school, and then you started working for one of the great legends in Quinny Scott.
Yeah, he really kick-started my career, really, and... probably the greatest boss, you know, you could have ever had at the time, and he still has a couple in work and see him every time I go down to Warrnambool. But no, he was great. Was doing school and working for Quinny at the same time, and I think work was taking over, and I was loving it more and more, and
and it went from there. And then this opportunity came up to do a 12-month stint at some academy at the Curra in Ireland. What happened there?
It did. Dad actually sat me down and said, look, you know,
we're sick of you and we want to get rid of you for a year.
Yes, he did. No. He said, if you want to be a jockey, well, he thought he'd teach me the right way and show me the ropes back home and just get a really good grounding. And there was this 12-month school offer on the Curra in Ireland, and Dad talked to a few friends, and anyway, I don't know how he done it.
Because there is a connection, a family connection in Ireland, isn't there?
There is. I've probably got more family than I do in Ireland than I do here, but lots of family in Ireland, and he thought it was really good the way Dad worked it out. He said, we'll teach you how to be jockey, and teach you the right way.
And but there was an enormous interest in the enrollment, wasn't there? So you were lucky to scrape in, weren't you?
I was late applying. There was a team of about 50, 60 applicants, and they took about 20. And they narrowed it right down, and I actually went over for a week's trial and crossed my fingers. I booked a one-way ticket, and I thought, oh, hopefully I get in. So it was a tough procedure to get in, and it was a bit like boot camp. They really knuckled you down and saw what type of things they could play with and get out of you. But it was the best 12 months. You know, they really, really had a great... would you say, like a grounding of my career to date?
Well, there's always been talk here about the need to step up the academy idea, and we've got the jockey school here. Just it might give an insight into. I know South Africa have a really good one. Tell us a little bit about this academy and how it played out on a daily basis. How many kids and was there any academic stuff or was it all horsey? Or
it was mixed between academic and school. So you'd come out of it with your credits for school as well as you did your riding and so the academic side of it. It worked out to be basic like year 10. You'd get your certificate. That converted over to here to Australia, but over there you'd get your schooling done, and as the riding part as well, you would come out, and the next step was to apply for your apprentice license. But they got you right up to the stage of riding well and riding to gallops and times, and
what was it like riding out during an Irish? When I spoke to you yesterday, you gave me a wonderful description of an early morning gallop at the Curra. What's it like riding out there in the middle of winter?
Yeah, it's definitely colder than riding at Ballarat on a winter's day, but the wind would cut you in two and you'd be scarfed up and probably have about five or six layers on, and you'd be riding down this field on the Curra, and there'd be sheep everywhere. And it's actually funny enough, you drive your car down there, you've got to give way to the sheep. But no, riding your horse, you'd be
riding. But the sheep scatter when the horses come galloping towards them,
don't they? They would, you know, the horses are so well trained, you know, you could ride your horse down the middle of the gallop, there'd be sheep on the gallop, and they'd split so evenly, and horse wouldn't shy a button. But just so different. And
what did you learn? What was the key thing you took away from that 12 months?
Yeah, look, Ireland was great. I worked for a really good trainer over there, Michael Helford, big Godolphin Aga Khan trainer, and it was just so relaxed. And you know, we'd probably only ride about four or five lots out a morning, but the time we spent with the horses was so great. You know, we really know the horse inside out and brush it groom before we rode out, and just so relaxed environment.
How important is it to develop that multi-dimensional relationship with the horse as a jockey? It's good. The more, the better you know the various quirks of the horse. The more you know it, the better the experience will be, won't it? When you're riding them.
Definitely, like the more you spend with the horse and you know it inside and out, really helps race day, especially with the team at home, Kieran and Dave. You ride a horse, track work, you gallop it, and then go to the races. You know how it'll operate, but which helps quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So to give an example of the contrast between how much time you'd spend with a horse there as opposed to, say, the Waterhouse experience or Kirima, it's probably you'd spend five or six times more time with a horse in Ireland, would you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it'd be 45 minutes to 50 minutes, a lot over there. You know, the amount of walking you'd done, it was just such a laid-back environment. And, you really loved the horse. You know, you got to spend so much time with him. As opposed over here, you know, everything's quite hands-on and rushed, so to speak. You'd only spend 15 minutes to 20 here, and it's a bit of a conveyor belt system we've got, but seems to be working. You know, it's quite hard to train as they do over in Europe.
Don't have the luxury of time or space or anything, do we, here?
No.
And one of the observations that people I've spoken to say about you is that you've got lovely, soft European sort of hands and balance and style. Is that something that you didn't have before you went over there for 12 months?
Yeah, for sure. I had a really good grounding when I went over there, and it seems to be paying off. You know, I get commented all the time about my hands and my seat, and it seems to be doing me justice, yeah.
Do they ride that much different there to here? I mean, I reckon styles have merged a bit.
Yeah.
You know, 30 years ago there was a Mick Ditman Australian style and there was the Lester Piggott sort of style. But do you find that wherever you watch races around the world that the difference isn't as glaring as it maybe was in your mum and dad's day?
It is. Look, in Europe, you know, they are very, very, what would you say? They're very effective riders, but they mightn't be the neatest as opposed to us over here. We go to Whiptown with our whips, but you know, the Europeans would be more effective. And
how are you with the whip?
When I first come over, I still now I'm not the greatest of the stick, but
do you find you need it much?
Well, see, as of late, I actually got time for the stick not so long ago, and Dad come crashing down on me hard there, and he said, "Look, you know, do you want to be European? Do you want to be Australian?" I said, "I'm stuck in both worlds at the moment," but I try to use my sticks as a last resort, and finds a lot of Australians out here, and there's rules. And
how often do you, because this is a bit of a crusade of mine, the last 100 to 200 metres of a race, how often do you think you require it?
if a horse is weak, it's quite hard, you know, if you've got a horse underneath you travelling. I think the rule before the 100 is quite hard. The five strikes before the 100 is quite hard, especially when you're riding over 2,000, 3,000 plus. But,
Anyway, that's my little crusade with the whip, because I want it banned in the last 200 metres. So you've done your 12 months, and you came back here for a holiday, and then your intention was to go back to Ireland, wasn't it? But it didn't quite work out that way.
It was. I actually sent Mick Alford a little bit of an email out on holiday here, and I said, look, I've started riding out for Kieran, and I don't think I will be back. But I would have loved to go back and started my career over there. But
tough gig, isn't it, to get in?
It's so hard. It's such a closed shop and hard to get in. As looking back on the troop of people in my my apprentice group I graduated with over there, the 20 of them, I think there's only two or three that are riding now, and it's just so hard for them to get riding. They've only rode a couple of winners between them, but just so hard to get over. But once you are flying over there, you know you're on a roll. But
did you get a sense for the popularity of racing in Ireland? I know that racing in Italy has virtually collapsed, and you know, every time an English person comes out here for the Melbourne Cup, they marvel at how much the whole town gets into racing, whereas for most of the year, the whole town doesn't get into racing here. And racing is in the lifeblood of people in Ireland. But is it a well-recognised sport outside of the industry? Did you get that sense for it over there?
Yeah, like everyone was so involved around racing. I think anyone you would talk to would have a family member who had been in racing over there, and just such a great vibe, you know. I think it's a national sport, is, you know, a national hunt racing over there, and it's such a shame, you know. They haven't got enough money in the game, even though they race quite often. But it's just so poor.
Mm.
I guess you could say after the recession, quite hit them quite bad, and they're still trying to recover. But
yeah,
the money in the game over there is which hindered a lot of people too. But they just don't have the luxury of the money we do for racing around here. And
yeah,
you often get people, you know, Kieran gets a lot of riders, European riders come out and ride track work for us, and they just can't believe it.
Mm. And you were one of those, when you came back for that holiday, what was it that made you stick instead of going back to Ireland when you started doing a bit of track work? And this is a couple of years ago when Kieran had the two barns at Caulfield?
Yeah, we've grown up now in numbers. We have got now three barns, and or had four barns for a while. But I just love Kieran was quite similar, quite the laid-back approach, and it was quite nice. It was so cruisy. It was really welcoming.
Do you wonder how he ever gets around to training so many horses with that laconic, laid-back attitude? He sort of does it when no one's looking, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, you catch it by surprise, but he definitely knows what's going on under that hair. But, very smart man.
So Dave Eustace joined the team as well. So there's kind of a eclectic group of people involved. You've got you with your 12 months at the Curra Academy. You've got Dave Eustace, who comes from a famous English racing family, and Kieran, who's always done things a bit differently. So it's a dynamic sort of operation, isn't it? Is that what's attracted you to that stable?
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think I just gelled, really. I felt welcome and such a laid-back environment, and it just reminded me of back home, really. As just with the benefits, you know, you get the sunshine down here, and it was I think the wet weather really scared me off, but it was good. You know, there's nowhere like home, and I felt home here. And you know, back Warner was really close, and I wasn't on the other side of the world, so.
So you had quite a few months with Kieran before the Waterhouse opportunity came up, is that right?
I did. I spent probably a year with Kieran before I was sent to Gay, and I just started race riding before I went to Gay's, and I just started to get going and get things rolling. And then Kieran, unfortunately, got a bit of time suspended for 6 months, and Dave took me aside and said, look, you know, we're thinking of sending you on loan for three months while Kieran's suspended, and send you up to Gay's.
Just on that on loan thing, is there sort of an exchange that goes on between stables of being on loan? You hear about it all the time. Is there sort of a structure within stables that they've got other stables that they shift staff around with?
Yeah, well, it's you hear it quite a lot with jockeys and stuff just to further their career and gain experience, but you know, you could either go on a three-month loan or a six-month loan, but it worked out well, and Gay was happy to take me on. I was quite excited at the time. And
what was it like? What was the first encounter with Gay like? What was the first morning at Tullock Lodge like?
Good morning, young man. And
did she put a book on your head to make sure you were standing up straight?
Oh, she done everything she could in her power to Yeah, get.
So how does it go? Like, because she's very big on presentation and how you come across and things like that. What do you think her first impression of you was?
Oh, it was quite funny. I reckon she made me shake her hand about 3 different times and before I got it right, and that was my first impression.
The perfect handshake. So what is the perfect handshake?
Firm, but not firm enough.
So don't do a Mark Latham and crush them, but don't be a wet fish.
That's it.
Right.
Just in the middle.
So that was the first week. What after the handshake?
presentation, I guess. I didn't think I looked too bad. I'd rock up with jeans and
that was your first boy.
She said, "No, young man, you must wear a pair of nice slacks and make yourself look like a jockey." We just see Corey Brown and Hugh Bowman walking around in a pair of jeans. I said, oh.
Well, so she fixed up your wardrobe and your handshake, and you were there for about 3 months, weren't you, riding?
It was good.
You didn't race ride, but you did a lot of track work, is that
right?
Yeah,
I would have loved to get a bit of a go up there, but it was a great grounding. I'd done 3 months up there and really good experience, and the amount of trials and track work you'd done, and I come out a much stronger rider. And
how many would you ride at work a morning for Gay?
Yeah, that was flat out. Actually, it's quite a resemblance. Our Tuesday would be her every day up there.
And she's probably not as big as she was. Can you imagine what it would have been like, 30 years ago when it was Tommy, and 10 years ago when Gay was top of the pops up there?
Blooming, yeah. But, yeah, to be fair, you know, it was flat out when I was up there, but much the same gig as...
So who's in the gang of jockeys that ride track work for her each morning at the moment?
When I was there, she had her apprentice, Rachel King, at the time. I think she's just come out of her time now and going really well. She had her Josh Parr would always come in. She'd have different jockeys every day of the week,
and from all over the world. She's always had a lot of overseas staff members as well. So does she train them hard, or is that a bit of a myth?
No, she does. She does. She gallop them, you know, quite often, probably 2 or 3 times a week, and they'd be nice, strong, hard gallops. And she'd done really well with the 2-year-olds, and I could pick a horse a long way out, and you know, if you didn't do enough work with the horse, and you're second slow, she'd make you go out and do it again. But you know, there was no question her; she knew what she was doing.
So you learnt sort of the subtle skills in Ireland with the soft hands and all that. But what I imagine the Gay experience hardened you up a bit. What did you bring to the table after that?
I did she really worked on me with talking and speaking and bringing me out as a person. I actually went up there probably a little bit shy, and she brought me out quite well.
So then you came back to Ma Eustace, or it was Ma at the time, and then Eustace jumped on board in the partnership. Is
that
how it worked
definitely.
Out?
I was it was Ma for a long time, and you know, Dave was always there, but he was assistant trainer for a long time, and I guess he was quite happy when he found out the gig he got. But I think it was always going to go that way, and it worked out a treat. You know, nothing has changed greatly, but you know, it's great the way it's worked out.
Well, it's a proper elevation to put his name in lights, because he's always been such a, you know, he's a young guy, Dave, isn't he? But he's every trainer at Corfu you talk to say he's the, if there's a secret man behind the man, or not, you know, if there had always been that figure, Dave's been that figure, hasn't he?
Yeah, for sure. Dave's great. I see Dave every morning, and you know, he's great with reviewing my rides and everything. And if I have a few outside rides, he'll always give me a ring after races and see how I'm going. And having my first ride in town a week or two ago now, he was straight on the phone after the races and seeing how I got on. And it's great. It's such a closely knit team, and we get along so well.
So your old man's, you've rekindled his interest. He's gone off driving trucks in that period where greyhound racing. Jumps racing was on death's notice, but your success has given him a little bit of a thought of maybe getting a couple back in work?
Yeah, for sure. Like, who would have thought? Big change of career, driving trucks and horse training.
One of them you can make money, and the other one's horse training.
That's it. he sees all these horse and riding over 2,000 plus, and he sees the action on them, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to get hold of that. We'd turn it into a nice jumper." And just with the prize money boost, you know, the money for jumping and the money for they've got now, you know, benchmark 58, you see some days worth 35 grand. It's just the money in racing now is crazy, which has really sparked his interest, you know. But it'd be lovely to see Dad get one or two back in work and go from there.
Absolutely. So suspensions thankfully don't come around all the time, and you're such a busy guy. You've only got couple of days before you're back into it. What's how do you best use your time in a leisure sense between now and getting back into the grind?
Yeah, look, well, I guess every Tuesday is tough, but no, it's great. You know, suspensions, I've been, touch wood, I've been really good for the past 3 months, but yeah, you know, you guess you take them with a pinch of salt, really.
Absolutely. Hey, you a fan of Jamie Carr?
Jamie, yeah, she was actually in riding a little bit of work this morning, and yeah, saw her there.
Well, she's coming in here tomorrow. She's you tomorrow.
Oh, there we go.
I'm looking forward to that. Theo, great to see you, mate. It was great to see Freddie as well, so it's good to see you young guys. You, just your work ethic as much as anything else, and you've been rewarded with a... well, you are in the top five in Victoria at the moment when you hadn't ridden this time last year. So it's an amazing story. Long may it continue, and good luck wherever you choose on wherever is chosen for you on Friday, yeah. Moonee Valley or Mornington. Fingers crossed.
Hopefully. Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. Theo Nugent there. And as I said, coming up on tomorrow's show, Jamie Carr, the megastar who's jumped across the border from South Australia. She's now in Victoria. And we're going to have her in the studio for as long as she'll take us through from 9 o'clock. Lots to talk about with her, including, you know, obviously the state of South Australian racing. And then the Bon and Blake Redden will talk Summer of Glory night one at Melton from 9:30. But for now, it's a minute after 10.